An abduction. Jane Allsop was abducted when she was 15, and nobody noticed. This happened a long time ago in Surrey in the 1960s, when parents were more careless. She was home from boarding school for the summer, and day after day the sun rose into a cloudless sky, from which Jane couldn't unfix the word cerulean, which she'd learnt in the art room. She wasn't clever or literary, and was nervous of new words which seemed to stick to her. Cerulean was more of a blank, baking glare than mere merry blue. It prized its way each morning like a chisel through the crack between Jane's flowered bedroom curtains and between the eyelids she squeezed tightly shut in an effort to stay inside her dreams. It wasn't acceptable in Jane's kind of family to complain about good weather, yet the strain of it told on them, parents and children. They were remorselessly cheerful, while secretly they longed for rain. Jane imagined herself curled up with a bag of licorice beside a streaming windowpane, reading about the chalet school. But her mother said it was a crime to stay indoors while the sun shone, and Jane couldn't read outside with the same absorption. There was always some strikingly perfect speckled insect falling onto your page, like a reminder of what? Of itself. Or a root nudging into your back, or stinging ants inside your shorts. The morning of the abduction, Mrs. Allsop, dishevelled in a limp linen shirt dress, was wielding her secateurs up a ladder, pruning the climbing roses. She was immensely capable, tall and big-boned, with a pink, pleasant face and dry, yellow hair, chopped sensibly short. Jane admired her mother greatly, especially when she transformed herself at night for a concert in London or a Rotary Club dinner, with clip-on pearl earrings and lipstick and scent, a frilled taupe satin stole. Jane coveted this stole and tried it on when her mother was at the shops, making sultry faces at herself in the mirror, although sultry was the last thing her mother was, and everyone told Jane that she looked just like her. She certainly seemed to have her mother's figure, with not much bust, no waist to speak of, and a broad flat behind. "Why don't you call up some of your old friends?" Mrs. Allsop suggested from the ladder top. "Invite them round to play ping-pong." Jane responded with evasive enthusiasm. She didn't know her old friends any more. That was what happened when he was sent away to boarding school. She said she was heading inside to find her jacquari set, a rubber ball attached by a long elastic string to a wooden base. You could hit the ball back and forth with a paddle, all by yourself, for hours on end. It was part of the family code that sport and physical exercise were meaningful ways of passing leisure time. Without them, you risked dissipation, letting value slip away. Only Jane's brother, Robin, was allowed a special dispensation because he was studying to get into Oxford. It was all right for him to have his head stuck in a book all day and to go around scowling, complaining that the sun gave him headaches. When Jane strayed into Robin's room, "Buzz off, shrimp, you're not permitted to cross my threshold," he was curled up on his side of the bed, his clasped hands between his drawn-up knees, his glasses off and his book propped across his face, Pink Floyd playing subduedly on the stereo. It was obvious that he'd been smoking. Mrs. Allsop smoked, with a casual elegance that startled Jane, but only on the silk stole evenings, or if she had women friends round for tea. For Robin, blind on his bed with a headache and sex fantasies and short-circuiting flashes of insane ambition, his sister mutely protesting, she simply stood there till he got up and pushed her out and locked the door behind her, was a visitant from his insipid past, when they'd been friends. Jane was listless, her mind a blank with vivid little jets of dissatisfaction firing off in it. Real children, somewhere, were wholesomely intent on untying boats, or building dams, or collecting butterflies to asphyxiate in jars, as she and Robin had done one summer. She should be more like them, she reproached herself. Or she should be more thoroughly embarked on her teenage self, like some of the girls at school, painting on makeup, then scrubbing it off, nurturing crushes on friends' brothers she'd only ever seen from a distance, cutting out pictures of pop stars from Jackie magazine. Jane knew that these girls were ahead of her in the fated trek towards adulthood, which she had half learned about in certain coy biology lessons. Yet theirs seemed also a backward step into triviality, away from the thing that this cerulean day, munificent, broiling, burning across her freckled shoulders, hanging so heavily on her hands, ought to become, if only she knew better how to use it.